This is the Africa service of Vatican Radio.
Welcome to our half-hour daily program for Africa.
Stay tuned for our bulletin of church news, which will be followed by Panorama, and then our feature, Culture and Society. We shall close with the news for young people. I am John Baptist Tumusime. Pope Francis began a three-day apostolic visit to Cyprus on Thursday. He was received at Larnaca International Airport by the Speaker of Parliament, Anita Demetriou. After a brief greeting and presentation of the delegation, the Holy Father proceeded to the Cathedral of Our Lady of Grace in the capital Nicosia for a meeting with the Catholics. Pope Francis is the second Catholic Pope to visit Cyprus after Pope Benedict XVI, who visited in 2010. You can hear more about the Pope's visit to Cyprus in our next edition. Pope Francis has accepted the resignation of Archbishop Michel Aupetit of Paris in France amidst a controversy surrounding an alleged prior relationship with a woman before he was Archbishop and divisions stemming from his poor administration. A statement issued by the Holy See Press Office on Thursday said Pope Francis had appointed Archbishop Georges Pontier, the Archbishop Emeritus of Masyri, as the interim apostolic administrator of the Archdiocese of Paris. Archbishop Aupetit was nominated Archbishop of Paris in 2018. He was a medical doctor before he joined the seminary as a lay vocation. He has been accused of authoritarianism and of continuing in a relationship with a woman he had before he was ordained. He told reporters in Paris recently that his behavior towards that woman may have been ambiguous, but that he had not had any intimate relationship and sexual relations with her. Pope Francis has nominated Bishop Emmanuel Badejo of Oyo Diocese in Nigeria to be a member of the Vatican Dicastery for Communication. Bishop Badejo graduated with a master's degree in social communication in 1994 at the Pontifical Salesian University in Rome. The Jesuit Conference of Africa and Madagascar issued a statement on Wednesday, December 1st, on the occasion of the World AIDS Day, and noted that socio-economic and structural inequalities are slowing down efforts to control the spread of HIV and AIDS. The statement underlines that inequalities exist between men and women in Africa, and that they have made women more vulnerable. Another factor which affects the fight against HIV/AIDS in Africa, the statement adds, are prejudices against people who are living with HIV and AIDS. The prejudices perpetuate a combination of shame, blame, isolation, rejection, and the fear of death, which deny those living with HIV and AIDS a fair chance in life. Quoting the social teaching of the Catholic Church, the Jesuit Conference of Africa and Madagascar said people living with HIV and AIDS have a right to access prevention, treatment, care, and support, irrespective of their gender, race, or religion. According to the United Nations, there are over 35 million people in Africa who live with HIV and AIDS. A four-day workshop for peace has ended in the Gambian capital, Banjul. It was organized by Caritas Gambia. The participants, who were mainly youth, discussed a number of topics, including peace building and organizing peaceful elections. The people of the Gambia will go to the polls this coming Saturday, December 4th, to elect a president. Previous elections have been characterized by violence. The participants at the workshop called for an end to electoral violence and other malpractices, including rigging. The Overseas Development Agency of the Catholic Bishops of Ireland, Trochea, has launched a project in the Catholic Diocese of Motare in Zimbabwe to help girls in school to access monthly sanitary pads. In a report released on Monday, Trochea said due to shortage of money and a worsening humanitarian crisis, most women and girls can't afford basic hygiene products like sanitary pads and soap. Women in particular put the needs of their family first and their own needs last, and often their husbands are not prepared to buy these essentials because for them it is a waste of money. The report quotes a young peasant woman who narrated to Trochea officials that she used to improvise sanitary products from old rags, which she used during her periods, although the pads cost an equivalent of $2. Trochea said the aim of the project in Motare Diocese is to restore the dignity, self-esteem, and confidence of women and girls. All women and girls in the diocese, irrespective of religious affiliation, are invited to register to benefit from the project. The Secretary General of the Association of Member Episcopal Conferences in East Africa, Father Anthony Makunde, has invited the faithful in South Sudan and Ethiopia, where armed conflicts are raging on, to look to the future with hope. Speaking on Tuesday at a workshop organized in Kenya's capital Nairobi by the Association's Department for Promotion of Integral Human Development, Father Makunde appealed to the fighting factions in the two countries to cease hostilities and resolve their differences through peaceful negotiations. You are tuned to the English Africa Service of Vatican Radio.
African News Panorama.
South Africa has recorded a sharp increase in coronavirus infections, which have doubled across the country since Monday. Health officials said the newly discovered Omicron variant may be fueling the surge, although it isn't clear how many of the new cases it accounts for. Some 8,500 COVID infections have been registered in the last 24 hours. According to the World Health Organization, Omicron has now been detected in at least 24 countries around the world. South Africa was the first country to detect the highly mutated new variant. The country's National Institute for Communicable Diseases has said more than 70% of all the virus genomes it sequenced last month have been of the new variant. At least five Nigerian government officials in Borno State were on Wednesday abducted by suspected militants linked to the Islamic State West African province. The five officers work for the Borno State Ministry of Works, which confirmed the incident. It said that the victims were en route to inspect a road project near Chibok Town. Damboa and Chibok Towns are close to Sambisa Forest, which is the main hideout for militants in the region. Borno is among three northeastern Nigerian states that have endured a protracted jihadist insurgency that has killed hundreds of thousands and displaced millions of people. Meantime, a federal high court in Nigeria's capital Abuja has ordered the security police to ensure that separatist leader Nnamdi Kanu gets maximum comfort while in their custody on treason and other charges. The order followed a complaint by his lawyers during a pre-trial hearing on Thursday that their client was not allowed to change clothes or even practice his religion. The emergence hearing followed arguments by his lawyers that the earlier adjournment of the case was against his right to a speedy trial. Kanu heads the indigenous people of Biafra group, which has been agitating for the secession of southeastern Nigeria. The trial has been adjourned to 18th January next year. Cameroonian opposition leader Maurice Kamto was on Wednesday detained at a hotel in the country's largest city, Douala, where he was scheduled to launch his latest book. the leader of the Movement for the Renaissance of Cameroon, missed his book signing at Hotel Valle des Princes. The opposition leader has in the past been detained and arrested by the authorities. In some of the instances, he was charged in court for various offences that government critics said was unfair targeting of opposition figures. A new study has found that Madagascar's current food crisis has been caused mainly by factors other than global warming, contradicting a recent United Nations report which blamed it on climate change. The report by a group of international scientists published by the World Weather Arbitration blamed poverty and weather conditions that were only minimally affected by global warming. You are tuned to the Daily Africa Service of Vatican Radio. This is Culture and Society, and you are welcome to the program. My name is Kanyan Tagodufri Kampamba. Known formally as Scottish International Relief, Mary's Meals is a global movement which sets up school feeding programs in some of the world's poorest communities. These are communities where hunger and poverty prevent children from gaining an education. It was founded in 2002 and has since grown from its first feeding operation of 200 children in Malawi to a worldwide campaign providing free school meals in hundreds of schools and feeding more than 1 million children daily. The founders of Mary's Meals named it after Mary, the mother of Jesus, because they were inspired by their Catholic faith. The chief executive officer and co-founder of Mary's Meals is Scotsman Magnus McFarlane Barrow, who has, since the foundation of Mary's Meals, dedicated his entire life to making sure children have at least one meal every school day. Barrow has recently written a book in which he looks at the role of philanthropy and generosity in our lives, entitled Give, Charity and the Art of Giving Generously. The book looks at the philosophy at the center of giving and happiness in our lives. Barrow recently spoke to Vatican Radio's Lydia Oken, telling her that he wrote the book to express his observation over the years that generous people, more often than not, tend to lead happy lives and are mostly full of joy and peace.
I suppose one of the main reasons I wrote the book was just that I'd seen over and over again that people who've really learned to give of themselves are also tend to be the people who are most happy in life, who are most full of joy, most full of peace. And I see that authentic acts of charity not only can transform the lives of those people that we try to help, but they transform us too when we get involved in good works.
You find with people like that they're already grateful for what they have. It seems to they receive an abundance because they're very grateful for what they have. Is gratitude very important, you think? Do you think it plays into all this?
Yeah, I do. I think gratitude is really important because I think one of the risks when we get involved in charity, perhaps especially if we're organizing charity, is we can start to identify only as the giver, you know, and those people out there as only passive receivers. But really, authentic charity is not like that. We're all givers and receivers, you know, in our journey into charity. You know, I think we soon discover we need to be people who know how to give and how to receive. You know, whether that's through our understanding that everything we could ever have to give, first of all, been given to us by God. You know, and so having that sense of gratitude for everything we have or everything we are able to do to help others, I think is really important.
We've also seen fairly recent charity scandals. I mean, do you think it's becoming harder for people to give, to trust that their money is going somewhere, but also because of difficulties that it is becoming harder to give?
Well, yeah, but in some ways, I think perhaps it's maybe easier to give. Certainly, sadly, because we're seeing just all around us in this new situation, new needs. You know, in our own communities, in our own streets and neighborhoods, never mind the deepening crisis of the world's poorest people. So there are a multitude of needs all around us to give to, and we see, I feel, an outpouring of new generosity, lots of new charitable initiatives in response to that, because I think that's always what we see in times of crisis and human suffering. We see the goodness of people and that charity that seems to reside in the human heart. But yes, you know, there are persistent questions around charity, you know, relating to some scandals or just questions that never seem to go away around charity overheads or CEO salaries or whatever it might be. And you know, I think absolutely people should ask questions of charities and expect them to be transparent when they're thinking of giving. And absolutely, more than ever, those of us who do have responsibility as stewards of charity, such a huge responsibility to do this work in a way that elevates the place of charity, that encourages people to give, rather than doing things in a way that can lead to people becoming disillusioned or skeptical or even cynical about the place of charity. So yes, so there's a huge responsibility for those of us who are involved in that way.
Would you say the people who have less give the most?
I think it would be an oversimplification to say the people who have less give the most, although I certainly have, in all the years doing this work, been repeatedly astounded by acts of generosity performed by people who have almost nothing materially. And I do sometimes think perhaps those people who do suffer poverty are somehow less, maybe less attached to what they have. But it would be an oversimplification, because also, you know, poverty can lead to desperation and behaviors associated with that. You know, and while people who are more wealthy might often find it harder to give freely, there are many examples of people of great wealth who do give in extraordinary ways. So, you know, it's probably not so much about how much we've got. It's probably more about our attitude to what we've been given. And again, maybe that sense of gratitude that you asked about earlier.
I mean, almost 30 years on from when you started your work, are you still on a learning curve? What is it that do you think has had the most impact on you?
Yeah, well, I'm still certainly learning every single day, you know, right from the beginning of doing this work. You know, it was not a work I planned to do. I never set out to found a new organization. I never expected to get involved in this kind of work on a full-time basis. And I still can't quite figure out why God asked me to do this, because I'm not really qualified for it. And so from the very beginning, it's felt like a very steep learning curve indeed, and still does, you know. And constantly being surprised by things that, you know, this current experience of pandemic, and just seeing again the resilience of people in those poorest communities in the world in which we work every day, but also again just that outpouring of goodness and just the determination of people of goodwill to find solutions so that they can help their neighbour in different ways. It's been a remarkable and very humbling thing just to observe that, the creativity of human beings as well when they want to do something good. You know, you see people who really love, they just feel compelled to keep going forward, to find that solution to new situations. And yeah, there's just so much to be learned in these days. More than ever, it feels like I'm on a learning curve in that regard.
You talked about you never set out to do this work, but from a faith perspective, do you kind of look at it as if God had a plan? God had a plan for me.
Yeah, I do very much. and I suppose maybe like many of us as we get older, it's a lot easier to make sense of that plan looking back on what's happened in our lives. You know, I always feel God's been very gentle and kind to me in that he just allowed me just to see one little bit at a time, because back then as a very shy young person, if he'd said to me I would need to start doing, I don't know, public speaking or media stuff like this, I would have run away and hidden. You know, I would have just laughed if someone had said that I would have founded a work that would end up feeding so many children, because I know I'm not qualified to do this. But God seems to work like that, doesn't he? And I do feel very much that God has a plan for every single one of us. You know, a really important plan. We're all called to respond to that plan, to play our part in making this world better somehow.
How important is the voice of Pope Francis when he speaks of the poor and the marginalized?
I think his voice is hugely important. You know, our faith is so rich. Our heritage when it comes to charity is so rich, you know, and I think Pope Francis just is constantly reminding us of that, you know, the core of the gospel message, you know, and also, you know, pointing us back to the early church, the words of the early fathers, and reminding us of that incredible radical charity of the early church.
That was the chief executive officer and founder of Mary's Muse, Magnus McFarlane Barrow, speaking to Vatican Radio's Lydia O'Kane about his engagement with Mary's Muse and the book he has written that looks at the role of philanthropy and generosity in our lives. And that is all we have time for today in this edition of Culture and Society. Until next week, at the same time, my name is Kanyanta Godfrey Kampamba.
Now, news for young people.
Come up on the other piece, open wide the door for everyone.
Hello and welcome to the program. I am Festus Tarawali. On the 10th anniversary of the Second African Synod's final document, Africhemunus, or the Commitment of Africa, we bring you some considerations therein on the pastoral care of young people. The document, which was signed on the 19th of November 2011 during Pope Emeritus Benedict XVI's apostolic visit to the Republic of Benin, dedicates numbers 60-64 to the youth. After acknowledging that young people make up the majority of Africa's population, Benedict XVI went on to note that this youthfulness is a gift and a treasure from God, for which the whole church is grateful to the Lord of life. Young people, he said, should be loved, esteemed, and respected. Whatever their possible ambiguities, they have a profound longing for those genuine values which find their fullness in Christ, he said. Continuing, the retired Pope said, if Christ is presented to young people as he really is, they experience him as an answer that is convincing, and they can accept his message even when it is demanding and bears the mark of the cross.
In the document, Benedict XVI said genuine and difficult questions about the meaning of life and the direction it is going to take often arise in young people. Therefore, he continued, they should be helped to know God, because it is only him that can give the true answer to those questions. However, he noted that concern for young people calls for courage and clarity in the message that the church proclaims, and it calls for good examples from those guiding them. Young people need witnesses and teachers who can work with them, teaching them to love the gospel and to share it, especially with their peers, and thus to become authentic and credible messengers, he wrote. Since young people are often tempted and sometimes enticed by ideologies, sects, money, drugs, casual sex, violence, among others. He urged young people to be vigilant, saying that those who propose these things to them want to destroy their future. In order to grow in discernment or good judgment, along with the strength and freedom needed to resist these pressures, the retired Pope encouraged young people to place Jesus Christ at the center of their lives through prayer, by studying sacred scripture, frequent recourse to the sacraments, formation in the church's social teaching, and for them to participate actively in church groups and movements. And re-echoing the call by the bishops of Africa during the Second African Synod sessions in Rome in October 2009, Benedict XVI urged young people to cultivate a yearning for fraternity, justice and peace, saying that the future is in the hands of those who find powerful reasons to live and to hope. And that's all for this edition of News for Young People.
You have been listening to the English Africa service of Vatican Radio, and I am Johnny Baptist Tumusime. In our next program at the same time tomorrow, you can hear our feature, Development and the Economy. Praised be Jesus Christ. Laudetur Jesus Christus.